The contents of this page have not been reviewed or endorsed by the Chicago Bulls. All opinions expressed by Sam Smith are solely his own and do not reflect the opinions of the Chicago Bulls or their basketball operations staff, parent company, partners, or sponsors. His sources are not known to the Bulls, and he has no special access to information beyond the access and privileges that go along with being an NBA-accredited member of the media.
Hi, it's Sam Smith, back mid-season podcast. We're coming up to mid-season in the NBA, which is, as I think I explained previously, not arithmetically correct, since 41 games happen sometimes in January, and this time this year was much too much snow and cold to notice. So anyway, we're up to the All-Star break, which is really a great time in the NBA season, unless you're interested in basketball, because that is a brutal weekend with some of those contests. That said, I really don't have a much better answer for it other than the best players participating, which hasn't basically happened since the 80s when Michael Jordan and Dominique Wilkins were in the dunk contest. Larry Bird was in the three-point contest, and you had the best players doing the best things. And I could sort of go off on an old man rant about that, about the good old days and all that sort of stuff, but nobody wants to be embarrassed, and I guess that I'm not sure where I fit in on that, but I'll give it some thought. But that said, so Joakim Noah, deservingly so, will be heading for his second straight All-Star game. Really, it's had a terrific run ever since the Deng trade, not necessarily because of it, as we know, you know, how emotionally affected he was by it. Deng being his closest friend on the team, did a lot together. He trained together. When they went into complaint to management on occasion, they did that together. So that's the kind of bond you can't break. But that said, the team did anyway, training Deng. And we kind of feel bad for Deng as much as he really loved being in Chicago. But as they say, players always say that it's a business. And it's too bad with Cleveland. I'm not sure what's going to happen in those circumstances. I'd find it hard to believe that even if they, quote, overpay him, that Deng will end up staying. I suppose there's a possibility with the Bulls having a chance to get under the salary cap that he could come back. But as he said before the season, he was going to look into free agency. And I think there'll be some different options for him. But I'd kind of be surprised if he came back to the Bulls, or actually if he came back to Cleveland more so. That said, I think, and before All-Star weekend, I know Joe is looking forward to it. And he was talking about having all his friends back from New York there again this year. And I asked, you know, if I could come over and meet some of them and go to one of his parties. And he said that given my age, he didn't feel he could be responsible for my health under those circumstances. So I'm not exactly sure what goes on at some of those, but perhaps I could sneak in. Anyway, that said, I wanted to take a look back, given this is the 62.5% mark of the season, 52 games down, something like that, 52 games down, 30 to go. Nice home stretch. Coming out of the All-Star break is always a fun time, because players, you know, kind of see the end of the season, trading deadline, and probably get into, maybe we'll discuss that next week, see what happens out of the All-Star break. I wrote a little bit about it in my NBA column on Monday. I don't really expect the sort of the big name moves that are thrown out there, Carmelo Anthony and Kevin Love and Rajon Rondo and all that. Usually mid-season, you don't see major kind of deals like that. I mentioned 10 different guys, not necessarily that they're being discussed, being traded, but I assume some are. Brandon Bass, maybe Bayless with Boston, a couple of different guys. But those kind of deals are more likely, and it is not likely to be a lot of them, given that teams don't want to throw in number one picks, especially in this draft. Although, I got to say, I don't watch a lot of college ball, almost none during the season. since I usually can't miss the last 4 minutes of a Sacramento game after midnight. But I've started to watch a little bit of because a number of the scouts, I talked to the scouts during the season about players. I'll do more on that once it gets toward the college tournament. And all of them started talking about this Kansas big guy, Embiid. So I turned on a Kansas game, and they took him out down the stretch of a close game. They ended up losing. So I rarely remember that happening with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, then Lual Cinder, or Bill Walton. And that is the tough part. And I do blame him in part. Look, if you're a freshman in college, almost you're not ready for the NBA. LeBron James was an extraordinary exception. Michael Jordan wasn't ready for the NBA as a freshman in college. You're just not. And you can see it with these guys, these high-level players. I'm sure there'll be some really good players come out of this draft, but you're not talking about franchise-changing players because they're so young. And Wiggins as well, very, very tentative player for the most part. I've seen, coming into the NBA, you're playing against men. You have to make an impact in college. I mean, these colleges, they're losing to teams of players who there's not going to be a single player in the NBA. And so they're losing games to these teams. College impact players don't lose those kind of games. Now, of course, they'll lose games, plenty of times. But I think from what I've seen, at least early on, this is kind of an overhyped draft. And that kind of thing happens after a couple of down years as they've been in the draft. But still, teams have sold it to their fans about it. And I think partially, and as a result, teams are going to be reluctant to give up first. And that's going to inhibit any other deals, too, because teams usually want to try to get, if you're giving up a salary, an expiring contract, the team doesn't have any guarantee that they're going to keep the player. So they'll usually want something, first-round pick thrown in. And since there's going to be fewer of them in circulation, I'd be surprised if there's all that many deals. Anyway, that said, I said I was going to talk about that next week, and I sort of wasted some time there. But I think as we know, regular listeners here, it's never a waste based on what I have to say. I don't think my family feels that way, but that's why I'm doing this more often. Anyway, as we all know and discussed many times, it's been a unique and disappointing season in many respects. Obviously, Derrick Rose's injury back on November 2nd. And then after 20-something games, January 6th or whatever it was, the date with Andrew Bynum's contract being guaranteed, the Bulls made the move for Deng to possibly get out of the luxury tax and bank some savings toward next summer or the summer after, where they could use it for free agents. Mirotić from Spain, any a number of those different options, first-round draft picks, whatever. So you're still sitting there. If you look at the NBA stats that are still out there on the Bulls roster, the team's leading scorer is Lual Deng at about 19. The team's second leading scorer is Derrick Rose at about 16, and those guys are long gone. So the leading scorer left for the team with the scoring the fewest points per game with the next-to-last shooting percentage is led by Carlos Boozer, averaging about 15, which is the fewest points per game for a leading scorer. So in many respects, it's really an impressive season. And you don't say that about 500, about where the Bulls have been. But playing 500 ball in contention in the East for a playoff spot, maybe even in the top four, amazing as it seems, given not only losing those guys, but having such limited scoring. Obviously, the defense has been terrific. Top three defensive efficiency, and also the things they do. The Bulls' defense against other teams' assists are low against the Bulls. Bulls' rebounding is high. Other teams' rebounding is low. And so all across the board, tremendous effort all season long. And it's a tribute, obviously, to the players and Coach Tom Thibodeau, given all the injuries. And you see teams when they have their top players collapse. Minnesota's a great example. a couple of years last year. And even though they've gotten players back this year that haven't done great, but they've hung around 500 for a while. But, you know, teams go to 25 wins when this happens, 22, whatever. And so this Bull team hanging around 500 is, you're not thrilled to talk about a 500 season. But that said, you know, to play at that level, to beat good teams, you know, go out in Western Conference as they did, you know, win in San Antonio, win in Phoenix against a hot Phoenix team that was one of the league leaders in scoring, and then finish up the trip, even though the Lakers were down players, six game in 12 days, all on the road. That's always a tough game under any circumstances. So, you know, successful Western trip by going 500, and, you know, especially what we've heard about the West, about how dominant it is, and the big variance between the East and West, and the commissioner, the new commissioner, Adam Silver, should consider eliminating not only the divisions, but conferences. So all 30 teams would play, and you put the top 16 teams in order in the playoffs. And actually, that I know that has come up. I don't think it'll be entertained seriously, but it has been brought up and suggested to the commissioner, the thing he should look at. And I assume he'll dispose of that quickly. But anyway, just taking a look at the season, I want to take a look at player by player. So kind of go by, maybe I'll start with Noah. Just a terrific season, symbolized who this Bulls team is, you know, the sort of his never quit attitude. He's had his career run in double figure rebounding games until he flipped out against the Kings last week. And signal. I made a 80s reference from the Flashdance movie, which usually my references get caught by maybe one or two readers. This one's a zero, as far as I could tell. But I seem to enjoy it. So, but anyway, Noah has been terrific. I'm not going to give out grades since my experience, my lifetime scholastic experience with grades was not particularly good. Really, any grade I would give anybody else would probably be superior to what I did, and probably don't want to do that. But that said, so Noah, I would give him a plus for this season, averaging a double-double, playing hard. You know, just had a little rundown after actually 2 points of the season, both after Rose's injury. Close to Rose, you know, not best buddies like he is with Ding, but, you know, more sort of a father-son or uncle-nephew situation. Kind of looked after Derek and worried about him. And to see him go down like that after the work really hit him hard. And then again, the dang trade. So, but bounced out of him both times. And I think a lot to do with Taj Gibson, who to me gets the next highest star on the team. Taj, clearly the most improved player on the team, has now demonstrated he can be a legitimate starting power forward in the league. Has not really been that until this season, just because he's lacked scoring. Kind of took a step backward last season after he signed his contract. His jump shot, which was developing, regressed. He regressed, but he really, give him credit, came into this season with obviously an incredible work ethic. Basically, he's become Thibodeau's teacher's pet. Talks about him constantly, and there's barely a conversation you can have with Thibodeau where he doesn't wax eloquent about Gibson's practice habits. And waxing eloquent is usually not reserved for discussion of practice habits. But that said, it certainly is with Tom. But Gibson's also developed really a nice post game. Jump shot's been good, proved his free throw shooting, and has really stepped into, and when he started, averaged almost 20 and 10 as a starter in seven games he started. And so it's demonstrated that depending on what the Bulls do with Boozer beyond this season, that Gibson could either play with him in the current role he is and, you know, split starting or actually even move up to starter. Now, that said, you know, Boozer's been consistent for the most part. He's had some down times. You know, he had the issue with, I would say it's a little down season for him. Had a little issue with Thibodeau, which I think was fine, was justified. Just said he wanted to play more, play in the fourth quarter. You know, just because his team has so little controversy and as little as any team in the league. Guys get along. Guys don't complain about their situation, their role. So it's so rare when anyone says anything that probably became a bigger issue than it deserved to be. But it went away quickly, and Boozer responded, had a big basket in the fourth quarter game after that. Phoenix, I think it was. And so, but has had a couple of little knick-knack injuries this year after being, and I love to say knick-knack, after being really the healthiest guy of all. With as we remember when he came to the Bulls, the issue was whether, you know, they could afford to pay him with the as many seasons he had missed. He missed probably 40% of his games with the Jazz, but has been healthy except for the first month of his season with the Bulls in 2010. And so he's had a few little things come up. I think he's really been bothered by all the talk that the Bulls would use amnesty on him this season. After this season, he's eligible just one more season, one more summer. And there's like a 10-day period or something in July where you can exercise that. And so, you know, that would be the question. If they do that, they have a chance of getting under the luxury tax, but not nearly far enough to get a max, quote, max type player like a Carmelo Anthony. That's not going to happen. And so, you know, it's really not a good free agency class. Is it worth letting Boozer go for nothing? And then, you know, to just get a modest free agent, probably somebody who can't average the 15 points he does. So there's obviously a lot of decisions coming up. But yeah, Boozer's shooting has gone down a bit. He's probably down around 45%, which is very, you know, is low for him. But the most part is, you know, with the minutes he's played, which is about 30, you know, averaging 15 points and 8.5 rebounds, he's remained a really good rebounder. So you have to consider it a, you know, a decent season, probably a little below, you know, his previous level. Then new starter, Jimmy Butler, become the shooting guard, kind of an iron man for the most part, although he did miss about 12 or 13 games with that turf toe. But tough guy, plays a lot of minutes, tremendous amount of minutes. He's just, at this point, miscast as a shooting guard since he doesn't shoot particularly well. He's been under 40% all season from the field, under 30% on threes, which is not nearly good enough to play that position. But, you know, with Richard Hamilton moving on, he's had to play it in sort of an emergency situation and stepped in, you know, played in the playoffs, showed some possibilities. I think he's good enough to develop, but you can see he's worried about his shot. He's feel pressured to make those shots because of the position he's played. But I give him a lot of credit. He really, really rebounds well. He's one of these guys. He's tough, and he'll go get tough boards in traffic, which the team needs. You know, as good a rebounder as Noah is, he's not, you know, a huge shot blocker, huge leaper kind of guy. So, and that is one of the strengths. So it, probably a little bit down season for Butler in the sense of, you know, what he expected or hoped for. I know he's been bothered by his inconsistent shooting. He's been a little hesitant. And as a result, probably doesn't drive the ball as much as he could because he sort of caught in between sometimes. But still, for his first season as a starter, I think it's been fine, averaging in double figures, contributing, and has demonstrated he's a worker and he'll get better. Kirk Heinrich, also not his best season, obviously started out, had a couple injuries. His minutes were cut back and seems to be getting a lot healthier now and is finally starting to shoot the ball better. Shot the ball a lot better in the last week or 10 days. Really, it's even when he wasn't shooting twos well in his career, he's always generally shot threes pretty well and hasn't shot threes well this year. And I think part of that problem is, you know, the Bulls run a slow offense and Kirk ends up a lot of the time, you know, after the multiple pick and rolls, coming back, swinging around, and now he's got the ball with 5 and 6 seconds, 4 seconds, shouting from the bench, time to shoot, and ended up in that position where he's had to force a lot of shots. And I think that's affected him as well, too. He's had a couple of periods where he became reluctant to shoot, but, you know, now I think he's coming back and gaining more confidence in his shot. So probably a little lesser season than they expected, but defense has been really good, plays hard, still one of the best defensive guards in the league, no question. Fights over picks, really bothers guys, plays physically, you know, and continues to do that despite whatever other issues. And really, maybe the key acquisition, obviously, was the pickup of DJ Augustine, who's really been a terrific addition. Big plus season for him. I mean, guy literally released by Toronto. Bulls pick him up on a minimum, just prorated for the rest of the season. Comes in, solid guards. You know, starting at nine or ten games with Heinrich out at times. Become probably the most valuable shooter on the team along with Dunleavy. Made a lot of big threes in the fourth quarter, runs a good pick and roll. So very huge positive addition, positive upbeat season for him. And then, you know, Mike Dunleavy, who's, you know, three-point shooting is a little down, a little under 40%. But, you know, has demonstrated ability to do other things, rebounds, unusually big guy for his, you know, for his position, which is sort of shooting guard, small forward, kind of outgrown his position in some respects. And I've thought a lot of the season the Bulls really weren't running enough for him. There's any number of games where, you know, he's only gotten four or five shots, and you got to get a guy like that 10 shots every game because he's going to make the shots. And along with Augustine, like I said, best shooter on the team. So probably maybe a little less than expected, but still, I think, you know, good season from him. And Tony Snell, been very up and down, but, you know, has shown an ability to make shots. Hesitant a lot of times. Some games, it doesn't look like he's sure whether he knows what he's supposed to do. But then other games, he'll come in there, take the ball to the basket, pull up for his shot. He's probably the best spot-up shooter already on the team. You know, Dunleavy's more better off the catch. And Augustine's pretty good off the pick and roll where he hits his step back. You know, for a limited play, Snell, you know, I think, has done okay for a rookie. Not, and obviously didn't make the so-called rising stars game on the weekend, and more sort of minutes, but, you know, showed some ability and shown some future possibilities. And then also Nazi Muhammad, I think he's been fine for playing his role, coming in, getting a little more time now with the roster down in the last week or two. But, you know, plays physically. Even made a great touch pass for a basket the other day. So shows you a little bit each time. Guy who stays in shape and works hard and, you know, just give you a little bit off the bench. And it's probably some minutes. And, you know, given the length of his career, you know, that's probably a good addition. And so, you know, really for most of that roster, you figure, you know, guys have, you know, played well under the circumstances, done as much as they can. You take out, you know, your two leading scorers, you're not going to have a great offense anyway. But, you know, it's a team that's rounded into shape, and, you know, now with 30 games left, has a good chance to make a run for a playoff spot. So should be an interesting run coming out of the break. Schedule's not exactly that easy. We'll get to it in a couple of weeks. They have a week set up there with Miami, San Antonio, the Rockets, and Oklahoma City, all in about an eight-day stretch, all at home. So be some good home viewing, even if tough games to play. So anyway, I'm going to try to enjoy the weekend with Joe, and I'm going to try to let him, if not let me into one of his events, at least tell me a story about it. And if I hear one, I'll pass it on to you next week. So anyway, we're heading for All-Star. How do they say that? I'm out of here.